Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I'm good, thank God. This week's parsha is Vayakel Pekudei and also Parah, and I'd like to speak about one aspect in Parah that always struck me, simply because it's my bar mitzvah parsha. And more importantly, I think it's to strike you as strange. And I'm going to be very traditional here in order to not sound too innovative, and then I'm going to be very innovative to my dismay. The parsha says that when a Jew is impure, he ultimately has to go through the ceremony called Parah, where you take a red cow, you burn it, you mix it with fresh spring water, and you throw it on to the impure person who's already done preparations towards this, and ultimately he becomes pure. You're all familiar? All familiar? I want to speak about one aspect, and that is, of course, the person that throws the water onto the impure person. So let's say Bruce is impure, Kevin throws water on him. Kevin has to be pure in order to throw water on you. He's pure, you're impure. You get splashed with the water, you become pure. What does Kevin become?
Impure.
That's different with the guy who throws the water and the gentleman who throws Aduma water. Both these people ultimately become impure. Now, obviously this is the biggest question about the whole ceremony of Parah Aduma, and therefore it is the ultimate chok, the ultimate law of the Torah that people can't comprehend, because how could it be you were pure a minute ago, you're still pure, you throw water onto this gentleman and you become impure. Now, whatever the reasons are for that, I don't know. What I'd like to do is speak about not the reasons for it, but to speak more primarily about what I believe we can learn from it. Yes, Bruce. Already a question. I didn't say anything.
No, there are conditions where a doctor can give an antidote, and in the course of giving this antigen to the patient, he contracts the disease.
Interesting. Very interesting. And this is exactly what I wanted to speak about, and that is, what do we learn from this? I don't know what it means. I don't know why God made it this way. It doesn't make sense. What do we learn from it? In my opinion, we have to be prepared to sometimes be in order to purify others. Yes, we will be abyssally tarnished. Perhaps it will be bright, but we have to be willing to do it. Let me give you a simple analogy to explain what I mean. There's a gentleman that is now drowning in mud. Simply in a mud storm, he's drowning. He needs you to pull him out. You're going to go, you're a very strong man, you're going to pull him out. You're not going to kill yourself, you're going to pull him out. The price will be that your newly beautiful polished shoes will get muddy. Would you be willing to do it? Of course. Right? Save a Jew. So let me ask you another question. Jews, very good Jews, the beauty of Shabbos and Yom Tov and everything else goes with being a Jew. They don't have the beauty of the Jewish lifestyle. And they're living in places with many Jews like them. Would you be willing to live there with them? Now the price will be that if you live there with them, it could very well be that there's less father and son learning at night, because that's the community you're in. And there's less religious people around you, because that's the community you're in. And there's less of what you would call the encouragement towards learning Torah and keeping a Torah lifestyle. In Israel, I go to Chutzal. Would you be willing to live there?
In Israel?
Yes.
Well, is your obligation refers to your family or this community at large to affect?
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to bring up. Your obligation is obviously to your family, because the gentleman who pours the water on the impure person is pure. He lives a pure lifestyle. But he has to be willing to become impure periodically, not for his whole life, in order to purify another volunteer to do it. I mean, living in a purity means that you're ultimately very careful as to who you touch, what you drink from, what you eat from. We're very detached from that world, but that's how you have to live. So you went through a lot of trouble to get to the state of purity. My question is, will you be willing to give up some of it for a few days in order to purify another Jew? So you say, why not, and I'm very happy to hear that. But ultimately, that's what I think the psukim are teaching us, that we have to do.
Well,
whatever it is, but the bottom line is, what does it make a difference? he is going to become impure from this ceremony because another Jew is impure. In other words, the other Jew is impure. Oh my gosh, I have to become impure now.
It's a one-time thing. We're not talking about like not much stuff. Like, a lot of people, they go out and they want to save the world and they want to help Am Yisrael, but they're not taking care of their own family very often.
Okay. So this is what I wanted to express very, very clearly. I don't believe that you have to go and give up your family. On the other hand, I do believe that you can give up some of the polish that you have for Am Yisrael. We're not talking about giving up your family. We're not talking about going to live in Alaska, where the simple, basic things you need to live as a Jew are not there. We're rather talking about, periodically, going somewhere to live in a place with other Jews to influence them. You know what? Forget about living there. We're talking about once a week going there. Now you're going to see people that are not dressed modestly. You are going to see Jews that eat non-kosher foods without a hechsher. You are going to be exposed to aspects that are counter to a Torah lifestyle. And if you think you're going to be immune to what you see, you are absolutely, unequivocally wrong. You will not be immune. As a matter of fact, you might become abyssally impure. Not as much as the person you're trying to purify, but abyssally impure. I believe that in our community today, this is missing. This is missing. If you would go to a religion, would you host a non-religious family? The answer would be a resounding yes. No problem if they're willing to come, I'll give them the beauty of Shabbos. But when you say, would you be willing to move to a community where there's a shul, it's an eruv, kashrus, but there's a lot of non-religious people. And perhaps the school there is not going to be on the level of the school in the religious community. It will be a religious school, but not on the same level. Will you be willing to become a little impure for your fellow Jew? I fear that today, the going rate, the going voice in the religious community, be it our community and be it the Haredi community, is so I don't know how these Jews read the Parsha. A Jew is willing to become impure for another Jew, and you're not willing to stickle it, get hurt for another Jew?
Even problems that have so they do that. When you interview for that kind of position, aren't there something that you can tell they're not going to be as effective anyway?
You're asking a separate question, Booth, and that is, of course, and then we go back to the Parsha, and that is that a person who himself is not pure, not a Kohen, whatever it is, can't do it. For the certain people that just can't do it. I think that the people that can do it. They can do it.
That's the problem, I think, very often that the authority world has, like with our community, with the community community, that we always think, oh, like, I'm going to go and save the world, and we're going to go out to all these places, and you miss out on the community very often.
Very nice, but I believe that it's not just the Haredi world. And I'll give you a very simple story to prove that if it was just the Haredi world, then they were. But it's our world, too. There is a Jew that lives in Haifa his whole life, never did one thing that has to do with Torah and mitzvah. Long story short, he started to get closer. He's not a religious Jew today, but he does the following. He wears tefillin every day, and Shabbos he goes to shul, Friday night, Shabbos morning. And he's, a matter of fact, very active in the shul that he's in. So because he's sort of like a success story, he was invited to a religious Zionist community in Petach Tikva to give a lecture. And he gave a beautiful lecture about how he came back to Judaism and everyone, a guy seeing the light and everything's terrific. At the end of the lecture, after the questions and the answers, he said, can I ask you all the question? He said, sure. How many of you have hosted for a Friday night dinner one of your non-religious neighbors here in the community that you live in anyway? The shul was filled with about 100 people. One hand went up. One hand. It turns out that the hand that went up was a hand of someone that's cousin lives in the neighborhood, and he hosted him Friday night, not so much for an interest of kiruv, but rather in the interest of, well, he's my mishpocha.
That's, why do we have to do kiruv so much? Where's that notion? Like, I understand it, but it's like,
so here we go. You're living there, but you have nothing to do with the community around you. Why? Why? You're living there already. Let me ask you a question here. How many of you work in places with non-religious Jews? 25, 30, 40, 50 hands went up. Well, how many of you have ever invited one of them to come to your Friday night dinner to expose them to Judaism? I don't know. You read Parsha Tara, you see a Jew that's willing to become impure for another Jew. He may be on rotation, he happens to be there, whatever the reason is, Bruce, he's willing to. And yet, you're living there, and you're garnished. I live in my own shul, I invite over my friends, I have kiddush with herring, and I can really, truly care less about what's around me. And I say the word careless very carefully, because if you did care, then the question begs itself, so what are you doing? You're there. And this is what I believe is one of the tragedies of where we live. And we're sitting in Efrat today. One of the tragedies of living in Efrat, in my opinion, is that we're not exposed to what the real Jewish people are. The majority of the Jewish people today are not religious Jews. I'm not giving a secret here. That's, our children are not exposed to who the Jewish people are, because we're living in an insular community. And I'm not proud of it. I think that the Yeshuvim are going to be one of the biggest success stories that are going to be written in history. The fact that after 1967, so many new Jewish communities were founded in Israel, and we're part of it. But on the other hand, one of the tragedies is that we're not exposed to Am Yisrael. And this has so many ramifications, I can go on and on. But one of the ramifications is, we don't have, in these particular places, the ability, physically, to expose Jews to this aspect. Yes, when you go to a non-religious wedding, to wish a mazel tov, whatever you do there, you're going to see a modest dress. You're going to see dancing that perhaps is not sneeze. Chas v'shalom mixed dancing. Yeah. So what do you? What should you do? Should you say, my holy eyes, pure eyes can't, because I have pure eyes? What do you say? Wow, this is a chance. Imagine a Jew with a kippah willing to go to a place like this. Yes, he will be tarnished a bit. His polish will rub off a bit. But do you know how far he'll go with a kippah on his head, wishing a big mazel tov with a smile to a non-religious Jew? I don't have to tell you how far you can go. And b'didi haviyuja. I'm not a miracle worker. I don't have under my belt 25,000 Jews that I mafi the tshuva. I'm a simple Jew, really. I was on an airplane recently. I sat down, a gentleman sat down next to me, very vividly non-religious. As is my custom, which I believe you learn in the school of Derech Eretz, not in the Kiruv school for miracle workers. I introduced myself to the gentleman next to me. Hello, my name is Yoshua. Oh, nice to meet you. Where are you from? Here, there, army, okay. We take off, he goes to his business, I go to my business. Then they, of course, come. This was not a religious airline, it wasn't even an Israeli airline. What do you give me? The kosher meal. What do they give him? The general meal. I eat, he eat, everything's fine. Before you land, there's a beautiful minhag that you have to close down all your electrical equipment. Experts in the world of aviation tell me it's one big farce. You don't have to close down any electrical equipment. It doesn't hurt the plane and nothing. But this is the minhag on the planes. You have to close down all your electrical equipment. And it might be a chilul Hashem not to do it, so you close it down. So you're sitting there bored out of your mind. So the gentleman next to me is sitting bored out of his mind. So he decides to strike up a conversation with me. What does he say to me? He says, you know, every time I fly, I forget to order a kosher meal. What made him say that? Did I ask? Did I question him? Did I look at him? Did I say, ooh, you're eating basa b'chola? I said, hello? And that was it. But he felt guilty all of a sudden. His Jewish neshama somehow felt, ooh, I have to say something because I'm eating non-kosher. He's eating kosher. Maybe I should have ordered kosher. I always forget to order kosher.
What'd you say?
I answered him. I said, there's a way I sometimes forget myself. But what I do is, I have a minhag the day before I fly. I always check my reservation online. If I don't see kosher food, I call the airline. That's my minhag. I've adopted for myself because sometimes I forget too. It's like you get the best seat. That's what you want to get. You want to get the right time you're leaving. You forget about the kosher meal sometimes. It's an afterthought, especially on small flights. You don't even think of it. So bottom line is, that's what I do. That's what I answered him. Now, what did I do? What, a miracle here? What did I do? What did I do? I said hello. Said hello. Interaction. That's it. Now, saying hello to a chilul me, you don't think that maybe you'll be a little impure? Could be. Let's say the woman, the person next to me was not a man but a woman. And you turn around, you look her in the eye, and you say, hello. So Shulchan Aruch says, she could be immodestly dressed. Who knows what's going to happen to your hormones from a hello. Think that Derech Eretz would dictate to go and say, hello, my name is Kach V'Kach V'Kach. You're not violating halacha here. You're becoming a bissela, yes, impure for a few minutes. That's what this calling does for the fellow Jew. So therefore, I believe this job is, as we read Parshat Paro, we have to ask ourselves, personally and from a community perspective, are we following this model or are we far from it? Are we going to be willing to throw water on an impure Jew? And perhaps by doing that, we ourselves might become a bissela impure, or we're not even willing. We're not even willing to give up one iota of our purity for another Jew. Yeah, Bruce.
This innocent person, this story in the parsha is coming to you to make himself pure. He's pushing you to do that, as opposed to you going out to looking for someone impure to become.
First of all, I don't agree. I don't think that's the only model that we see in this week's parsha. I believe that it could very well be some other reason he happens to be in the Beis HaMikdash, not because he's coming to you willingly. I don't agree necessarily that would be the case. But secondly, even if it is the case, so he comes to you and he says, I want you, Bruce, to come to my wedding in discotheque, I don't know what, on this and this day. You'd be willing to? With your kids? Your wife? No, he's not marrying a non-Jew. Why do we always go to the intermarriage here? Because, you know what's going to be at this discotheque? Everything you don't want.
Why is there a difference if he's marrying a non-Jew or not? Why is there a difference if he's marrying a non-Jew?
He's marrying a non-Jew. In my opinion, I don't think you have to wish him out of it. I'm not saying cut off the chains of communication, but I'm saying I'm not so sure you should go to the wedding personally and say, a mazel tov, I'm so happy you're marrying a non-Jew. Okay, you can very politely say, I'm sorry, I can't come. Or, I'm sorry, I can't come, I don't feel comfortable coming, and I bet you he'll understand. Well, that's exactly what I'm not talking about, red lines. I'm talking about being a mensch with your fellow Jew and being willing to give up some of your purity for a fellow Jew. I am not talking about violating your whole value system for a fellow Jew. Just because a Jew is about to murder someone, how is it destroying your value system if you become a little impure? I'm sorry, but you tell me how that destroys a value system. What's his value system? Where did the value system come from? I don't understand. When a sota came to the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen did not talk to her?
No, I'm not saying that that's the shot that we should have.
So I'm asking, where does the value come in here?
The value system, that's going to say, I'm not going to go for a non-Jewish wedding, but I'll go to a discotheque to any wedding. So he has a value system that says that he's not going to sit next to him in another plane.
We're talking about two separate things. The first is, what is your red lines? And everyone should have red lines. The second issue is that the issue that I'm talking about, and that is, sometimes you have to give up a little of yourself for others. I'm not saying give up your value system. And I'm not saying tell your kids to be dressed for the sake of this. I'm saying abyssal of becoming impure for another fellow Jew for a few minutes, for a few days, whatever it is.
Why abyssal is totally impure? The guy's going all the way.
No, it's not totally impure because he doesn't have to have a parah aduma himself. He only has to go to mikvah.
But he's tamei.
He becomes tamei on a certain level, but not on a high level. And that's very important to remember here too. That is, that the kohen that throws the water or prepares the water does not become tamei to the level of the person he's trying to make pure. It's not tmeimet. It's not a via vota tuma. It's a little less. And that's very important to remember, because I don't believe that for a fellow Jew, everything's mutter. Everything's mutter, because kiruv is the most important mitzvah in the Torah.
Right, but then it becomes subjective.
It becomes very subjective, but the question I'm throwing out today is not what are the red lines, it's not what we won't do, or rather, are we willing to do it? And I fear today that it's not on our agenda anymore.
It's enough to do with NFR. There's enough to do with NFR. You don't have to go to other places.
Okay, so let's take your beautiful example and ask ourselves, what are people doing for Inifrat? All I see so far on the comments is when they see people, kids, teenagers, that look like they're on drugs and they're smoking a bit, what they do is they avert their eyes. They avert their eyes! Now, are you an expert on drug abuse? Are you an expert on addictions that you can go and help these people? probably not.
Inviting for a Shabbat meal?
No, probably not. And I don't know if inviting them for a Shabbat meal will take them out of their addiction. But you can be a little impure by going to them, looking them in the eye as they're cursing and yelling and shouting. I wish them a good Shabbos. Nothing will happen. Last Shabbos, I saw something in Efrat, my word of honor, and I couldn't believe what I saw. I have a porch that looks out to the street. So I could see Shabbos morning before shul, and you drink a cup of coffee. Yes, I drink a cup of coffee before shul. Ultimately, you'll see, without sugar and then milk, you can see the people. The people are walking to shul. There was a very chiloni couple, man with jeans, woman with jeans, pants, two kids, walking on the street. I don't know where they came from. I didn't see them getting out of the car, but I saw them walking. I saw at least five people walk right past them and not even acknowledge them. Hello, welcome to our community. We're glad you're seeing the light. Oh, beautiful.
They walk past everybody else.
That's a good point. Everyone passes by everyone.
I disagree, because on Shabbos, when you walk past people, we say good Shabbos to our own.
No,
here
no.
Is someone abyssal different, the jeans and the milk kippah, and he shaves his head. Right. He doesn't look like he's part of the local trapping. So what did they do? Walk past. I threw the cup of coffee into the sink as fast as I can. I ran out. I thank God they were still walking. I looked them straight in the eye and said, good Shabbos. I didn't say, welcome to our world. Won't you come in and have a beautiful chulin? Then we're going to machzeh you b'tshuva. What am I, stupid? But you can be a mensch without being stupid. But you can be a mensch. A mensch means, how can it be that we don't have the simple derechas of saying hello? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Gemara says, went through the streets, lo higdimu adam shalom le'olam. There was not one person that was able to say hello to him first. Afilu nochri shebashuk. Ooh, you say hello to a Mother Teresa, a Mother, from the church, a mother, no, superior. The mother superior he said hello to, but he said hello to everyone. This is the man that was steeping Yirat Shamayim. The Gemara in Sukkah says he wore tefillin all the time, he never left the base medrash, I think it's up to Chet, if I'm not mistaken. But he had time to say hello to everyone on the street.
And he had his sister Mary Reshlaki.
There you go. Baruch Hashem, Toro Gedula B'makom Echad. Ladies and gentlemen, how can it be? Someone looks a little different, you just walked in.
Did they respond to you?
What?
Did they respond?
With a big smile.
What did they say?
Well, a good Shabbos back. I didn't say, Bruchim Abayim, maybe they live here, I don't know them. And I didn't say, come to my Shabbos meal, because that already would look, that has to do with Kiruv 101. But, bottom line, be a mensch. Yes, you're going to look at a woman that doesn't cover her hair. Yes, you're going to look at a woman that doesn't cover her hair. There's no Isser probably Erva in looking at a woman that doesn't cover her hair.
They were just looking.
They were just walking.
So they weren't.
So why don't people say good Shabbos? Because they don't look like my friend.
No, they don't look like
that's not why. No, I disagree, Bruce, because we do say good Shabbos. I disagree. Most people say good Shabbos to each other on the street. If they don't know them, if they look religious. If they look religious, and if he looks like he's part of this, then yes.
I agree with you 100%. I'm curious for the Kohen if he's going to the water. He happened to be on duty that day, and that's why he's doing it?
Probably, yeah.
As opposed to, you needed a special person.
Probably, yeah.
I'd rather not.
So what happened at night? He becomes on the car automatically?
He goes to the mikveh. He has to go to the mikveh.
And then he has to wait, or does it?
I think he may have to wait. He has to go through the halakos again.
So, I mean, they could have done this at 4 in the afternoon.
And maybe he needs a harif shemesh, which means he has to wait till the sun goes down, then he has to go to mikvah.
So in theory, they could have done it late.
Very righteous step. He's doing a very good thing here. I think it's a learning from that. Or they could say, you know what, they thought twice.
To answer your question, I don't personally know a Ma'amar Chazal that says this. I could probably look and find. But I believe that anyone that would be sensitive to the psukim would see is a kohen that's willing to impure himself for another person who could be a Joe Schmo that wants to do a carbon pesach. What can I say? He wants to have a seder because it involves Jewish eating and he likes knedelah. But it's based on mikdash time, it's carbon pesach time, he needs to be pure to eat the carbon pesach. He can care less about anything else. This is the Jew, how can we say? I heard a beautiful story about a family that eats nevelos and treifas, but because they emanate from the Horvitz family, the Baal HaFla, they don't eat turkey, because he says turkey chatzis. So they don't eat turkey. They eat nevegos and trefas, but turkey chatz v'shalom. Okay, you mean no Jews like that. Okay? Nope. So this is a Jew like this comes to the base. I lead a beautiful lifestyle, nothing that has to do with Torah mitzvahs, but I want to be at a Seder, but what can I do? There's a Korban Pesach on the table. I need to be pure. So purify me. And the Kohen has to purify him. What do you think? He will.
What do you suggest for the community, Tom?
I think the community has to ask themselves, are we willing to be like this Kohen? And if so, how do we do it? I'm not saying everyone has to mass now leave, and I don't say everyone has to mass get into Kiruv. You have to have a certain personality for that. But you can definitely become a bit of impure. Everybody can do that. And that means to say hello to people on the street, be it in Yerushalayim, in Tel Aviv, or any other place you're in.
You say hello to everyone on the street?
Hmm? I try.
Not on Shabbos.
Not on Shabbos. That's my personal vendetta against this. And that is that I say hello to people. I acknowledge women and men. Sometimes it's a hello. Sometimes it's just a nod. But I don't like to walk by people on the street without acknowledging them. More than that. As you know, one of the things I do is I officiate at weddings of chilonim, and I ultimately try to do it to the best of my abilities. And the first thing I do is I tell the couple I have a very high price, because I am a sought-out rabbi. I'm a real Michael Jackson. My price is you have to come to my house, to my living room, where I can host you in my home, and I can speak to you for about an hour and a half. We speak about the chuppah. Speak about what a Jewish life is like, what it means to build a family. And ultimately, I don't do a chuppah unless I meet the couple. Then I come to the couple, and ultimately I come to the couple, and I ask them, I come to the wedding, they know me, I know them, I know where they're from, I know that I meet the parents, and I walk around, and I say hello to people. An hour of my life, I am exposed to a lifestyle that maybe I would be uncomfortable with. Yes. Now, you're doing a mitzvah for them, you can debate, maybe yes, maybe not. The one mitzvah I know I'm doing, and that is, I am willing to follow the dictates of Parsha Parah. And since it's my bar mitzvah parasha, I feel even more of a obligation, of chukat, not parah. But I feel more of an obligation because I see this staring me in the face very clearly. A Kohen's willing to become impure for a fellow Jew. He's not the same saying, oh, for a fellow Jew, I'm going to mix dance. That's for sure. I'm going to eat nevelos and trefas. That's for sure. But I'm willing to become a little impure. Yes, I'm leaving my purity. In order to remind everyone, the word purity, tahara, is a term from the Beis HaMikdash. It's not a term from life. Anytime you see taharat HaKodesh in the Gemara and the Mishnah, we're talking about people that adopted certain dictates of the Beis HaMikdash to their own home, like eating chulin b'tahara, eating meat only b'tahara, regular meat, barbecued meat b'tahara. The word tahara should be used in the Beis HaMikdash. That's where it belongs. The word Kedusha should be used everywhere. And therefore, I believe that we have to be willing to give up some of our so-called Tahara for a fellow Jew. And we have to ask ourselves, how do we do it? What is our capacity to do it? Some of us are more built for it, some less. But everyone should do something. And a hello on the street, I believe everyone can do. And I just want to end with one thing. Rabbi Nachman from Bretzkov once said, Mitzvah Gedola Liot B'Simcha. I don't understand what he's talking about. The Torah dictates when you're supposed to be the Simcha. So if you're supposed to be the Simcha all the time, why would we say the Samachta Bechagecha on certain times of the year? I don't understand it. But I take from that statement. You have to ask a real breath over what it means. But I believe from that statement just means one thing. Do you know how far it goes with a smile on your face when you say hello to someone and you have a kippah on and you cover your hair? I can tell you it goes very far. If you ever want 2 o'clock in the morning to hear 10 stories with how far a hello went, I'd be very happy to share them with you. That every Jew can do. You're built for Kiruv, you're not built for Kiruv, you are into it, you're not into it, you can give a good speech, you can't give a good speech, you're an inspirational speaker, you're not an inspirational speaker. Every Jew with a smile on their face can say hello to a fellow Jew. Yes.